Hope so.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Oh, Andrew, I thought you were just away from the mic, but we had disconnected.
Well, when you left, I thought you were really leaving.
What do you mean?
You said you had to run downstairs.
Right. Yeah, but did...
You were gone, so... Oh. But you're back. Welcome back.
Well, welcome to house. Did you bring me some such?
I have such all over my desk.
Did you have such all over your... Andrew said that he had to go get water and such, and so I asked him to bring me some. What does such include?
Crunchy stuff.
Sulfur.
Yeah, the sulfur.
That's a such.
Uh-huh. And what else do I have over here? Things.
Things. Private things.
I have an article that I pulled from 2013.
Really?
Because a lot of people have been asking me questions about this idea that some global wealth confiscation is in order, you know, where they take chunks out of your bank account. And I recalled the International Monetary Fund had done this fiscal monitor report back in 2013, and we spoke about it. And they essentially laid the groundwork, the article's title is correct, for the confiscation of wealth. I'll give you a quote.
Okay.
The sharp deterioration of the public finances in many countries has revived interest in a capital levy, a one-off tax on private wealth, as an exceptional measure to restore debt sustainability. The appeal is that such a tax, if it is implemented before avoidance is possible, and there is a belief that it will never be repeated, does not distort behavior, and may be seen by some as fair. The conditions for success are strong, but need to be weighed against the risk of the alternatives, which include repudiating public debt or inflating it away.
Well,
the tax rates needed to bring down public debt levels to pre-crisis levels, moreover, are sizable. Reducing debt ratios to end 2007 levels would require a tax rate of about 10% on households with positive net wealth. Hey, you have $200? Give us $20 right now, one time, never have to do it again. IMF says that's probably a good alternative.
Well, I think so. Just spread it around. This was in 2013.
If you have money in the bank, the part about if it can be implemented before avoidance is possible.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, somebody just paid $1.9 million for Jerry Garcia's guitar.
I saw that, yeah.
Did you see that? Somebody paid some enormous amount of money for Elvis Presley's old airplane. And so on. Mm-hmm. In the coin arena, we're seeing record prices every auction. And so artwork, I think that Basquiat painting went for some insane amount of money. Did you hear about that? So put your money into anything that is not leviable.
Leviable.
So it's not like you could come in and say, okay, your couch is worth $100, your chair is worth $5, although they do that now in some states, the personal property tax.
Uh-huh.
What we're talking about here is a direct wealth tax, a levy, where they just look at your bank account and perhaps your investments, if they're in money-type form, money market funds, etc. And they say, okay, we have a 10% one-time tax, you know, into the treasury. So would that save a Greece or a Venezuela or an Argentina? Well, it's been done before, and my bet is that it'll be done again.
Well, but see, my $2,000 in my bank account
uh-huh.
is, I have a password and everything. And so, I mean, it's. I mean, it's,
oh, you're all right. Yeah,
I'm cool. I mean, okay. I got a password, and there's nobody getting in there.
Yeah, who gave you the password? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not sure, but I got. So, I mean, the gov, the one we love, just can't go in there and take my $2,000. You're saying they could.
The IMF is telling them to go ahead and do it.
Well, we know. I mean, just for fun. I mean, we don't want to talk bad about anybody. We do know that the IRS can do that anytime they want without a court order.
Wow.
If they think you owe them money, you know, they can just go in and take it. You know that.
See, can Sears do that?
Sears, no, they don't have as many guns. No, Sears, no. No.
How about the student loan program? Can they do that?
Can they do, what are you asking?
Nothing, I'm sorry, I'm being facetious at Wednesday morning.
You're being facetious.
Facetious, yeah. The fact is that the Fifth Amendment protects you against unreasonable search and seizure.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, okay.
I lost one. Where'd that one go? Whoa. Yeah, I know it's tough.
Yeah, no, the Constitution and the list of suggestions are routinely ignored by today's structural framework, and the idea that some quasi-governmental agency can order a banker to hand over your property.
Yeah.
That's well established in law.
Right? Well established meaning they get away with it all the
time. Yeah, it's up to you to now sue to get the property back if you want
it back.
That's
right. That's exactly right. That's the way it works.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, they can. The password that was given to you by the bank.
Yeah.
They, of course, are the ones that gave it to you. So they, of course, have access to every account within their institution. And an order coming down through the Fed system that says, you know, a 10% overnight levy on every account in your bank.
Do you think it could happen?
Do I? In an emergency? Yeah, I think it could happen.
Sure.
You know, they confiscated the gold last time. So when there's the most dire of extreme financial emergencies, which they, of course, deem whatever it is.
Yeah.
Then yes, of course they can do that. Yeah.
Sure, but you know when you think
it's an emergency.
Yeah, when you think about it, if they Doug and Mel can call in the gold and declare it illegal to own the gold in 1933, which is really the most strident form of real money in the world, they could certainly do stuff with digital things.
Digital
aren't anything.
Yeah,
you know,
and,
right.
Yeah.
And they would do it. Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, once again, maybe that's why the Bitcoiners are.
How about the big surge in Bitcoin?
It's almost $3,000?
Yeah. Do you know why?
Well, yeah.
Tell me why.
Because it's going up.
Nah. You know why it's going up?
Because China or Japan?
No. It's just hilarious why it's going up.
Oh, you know why it's going up?
Oh, yeah.
$2,800 $2,800 this morning for a Bitcoin.
Broaching, heading for $3,000. So we talked about Bitcoin as a reality, right? There's no substance. The only reason people buy it is because it's going up. Very few merchants take it. You know, they don't price their goods in Bitcoin. And on and on and on. But the most important thing is there's no central bank.
Nada.
So if everyone is buying, what happens to the price of Bitcoin? It goes up. And if everyone's selling, it goes down. And there's no one in the middle to, as I quote often McChesney Martin, one of the early chairman of the Fed, there's no one to lean against the wind. It's the same guy who famously said his job at the party is to take away the punch bowl just when the fun is getting started. Supply dictates value. And central bank's job is to stand in the middle and to take waves of selling with offsetted buying and to take waves of buying with offsetted selling, thereby keeping stability in the currency. You know, from a technical standpoint, that's the central bank's job. So in order to prevent a roller coaster type ride, they smooth out the bumps by selling when everyone's buying, buying when everyone's selling. And keeping a stable value, which they presumably know because they're the central bank. Bitcoin is without a central bank. Bitcoin is without a supervising central bank. So it's all about people buying, price goes up, people selling, price go down. Well, I don't know if you've heard, maybe over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, this virus that affected computer systems around the world.
I certainly have.
Oh, boy.
I certainly
and that it was known as ransomware.
Yes.
where, hey, we've
ransomware.
Right, we've got your stuff. We're in your computer, City Hall. We're in your computer, library. We're in your computer, hospital. And you either pay us or we're encrypting all of your files. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Yes. Police departments. Hilarious. Guess what the ransomers want for your data?
Bitcoins.
Yes, they do. They want Bitcoins.
Guess oh, sure, because they can't
anonymous,
track them.
That's right. Anonymous wealth transfer. So guess who's buying Bitcoins? Everybody who needs to pay ransom.
Oh, so this is why it's going up.
That's why it's been going up.
I'll be darned.
Now, if the ransomers just want to hold a bunch of Bitcoins, well, then I suppose they'll hold their value. But my thought is, what if these guys really were doing this because they want to convert the Bitcoins back into dollars and go retire on an island somewhere?
Well, they will at some point.
What's going to happen to the value of Bitcoin if that happens?
Yeah, if you're the criminal hanging out in Belize and you're stacking Bitcoins, I guess someday you're going to have to cash into Bitcoins, right? Otherwise, what's the point? You're going to have to change them to dollars.
Well, maybe you're collecting Bitcoins.
No, you don't collect Bitcoins.
You know, they're coins.
They don't even collect their value.
Aren't they coins?
No.
They're Bitcoins.
They're Ethereum. They're something. I don't know what they are. They're even more ethereal than dollars are.
Listen, I've read Popular Illusions and the Madness of Crowds and how people can see value in something that absolutely has no substance.
Well, no, I don't think you're right because my great-grandfather...
Okay, no, that's right. It's a Luddite way
My great-grandfather, he was into the tulip thing, and man, he made some money.
Oh,
tell folks about the tulip mania. Now, this is classic, right?
Yeah.
You can't even make this up.
Yeah, essentially, 1600s, I think it was.
1600.
Yeah. You know, the beautiful bulbs that came out of Holland. Tulip bulbs were rare, man. They're like beanie babies. People started treating them like investments.
They were investing in tulip bulbs.
Yes.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Why would you invest in something that's going to just crumble up?
Well,
I don't
because they're pretty.
Okay.
And they create this variety. And then next year they grow and they come back again. And so
anyway,
people developed this fascination with tulips and started buying tulips. And, the thing about tulip mania that you're taught is about folks putting faith in something lasting into the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And supply and demand at its basic function. Because you know that once people started... saving tulips, other people started making tulips. You know, more tulips you could put on the market, the more money you can make. And so the supply-demand equation is taught. Once that supply overwhelmed the demand, then the price fell, and people who were investing lost their value, and that kind of the story of tulip mania. It's a lot more fun to read. There's several good books
How expensive do tulips get at one point?
Oh, goodness. Ridiculously expensive. Half a year's salary for a typical worker, a single tulip bulb.
Well, that's crazy. That's more crazy than
$2,300 Bitcoin.
Than a $2,300 Bitcoin or Beanie
Okay, but Babies, I will say to you Bitcoiners out there, you know, God bless you. You're having fun. You're doing a great job. However, if... the ransomware people finally gather all their Bitcoins and decide to exit the stage and not hold the Bitcoin anymore, your thought has to be now who's going to be the new buyer. But if they keep this ransomware thing going for a while, there may be a significant demand upswing where people are trying to buy the Bitcoin to get out of the of the encryption nightmare that they find themselves in. But then once they're out, you know, they're going to lock their stuff down, and the number of victims will dwindle, and then the number of payouts will dwindle. And then the question is it game over, and do we sell the Bitcoin? Who knows? So understand what's going on right now. It's as I dug down into this to find out, are people really investing like an investment? You know, can I buy a bunch of Bitcoins? Well, there is a certain amount of that going on because of all the publicity. But
people think it's going to go out at $3,500,
which
or whatever.
Is the only reason they're buying it.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to a gentleman who told me swore he made 8 times his money. He came in, he bought the Bitcoin, and he waited a while, and then he sold it, and he got out with 8 times his money, cash money.
Sure.
So there's a lot of that going on, I'm sure.
And you can look at. They have a little graph here.
Sure.
And you can see every time a Bitcoin is purchased. and they just pop up and they tell you how many bitcoins and for how much. Here's one that just came on the screen.
Yep.
Somebody just bought, check this out, 5,247 bitcoins.
Yep.
Times $2,800.
Yeah.
Is $14.5 million.
Yeah.
So somebody just spent $14.5 million. Here's another one, 7,000. So people are spent, you know, wow, the people that must be playing this game are a lot of the big boys. They got to be, right? I mean, no, you know, there's not a lot of people who spend $10-20 million in a second like that.
Well, yeah, these are heavy duty institutions for sure.
There must be, yeah.
Yeah,
that they're just playing this like they're doing any other gambling thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating, man.
Yep, yep. So I would urge caution. Anyone who considers that a good way to store your wealth, I just urge caution.
Now, the thing, yeah, I thought of something this morning that maybe, see the Treasury, right? But then I found I had a problem with my theory. I thought, well, maybe the Treasury could just, you know, every day just buy $1 billion in bitcoins, wait till they go up and then sell them and then, you know, get rid of the debt. But the trouble is, which could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at it, there is a limit to the amount of bitcoins, and there's only so many that they can sell right now. So there is a limit. So I don't think you could go in there with $1 billion and buy them right now.
Wait a second. Wait a minute. Are you telling me I can't buy Bitcoin futures?
I don't think as yet.
You don't think I can buy an option on a Bitcoin?
Can you now?
I thought
the FTC was mulling that over.
Well, I know
they're mulling over an ETF.
While they're mulling
Bitcoin,
there's a dark market.
Oh, yeah. There must be.
Yeah, there's absolutely a dark market. And people who don't know anything about Bitcoin, you know, are getting the, hey, you want some Bitcoin? I'll store them here for you. Just give me a check. And then you're going to have the same schemes that are prevalent in gold and silver. Remember the gold and silver supply and demand equation, right? There's a fixed supply. So how do you increase demand? By paperizing it, by selling contracts and options. And, oh, we're going to do an exchange-traded fund that holds Bitcoin. Once you drill down into it and see what they're doing, these are essentially people that are shorting Bitcoin. And then they have an incentive to drive the price of Bitcoin down. I'm just, for me, no game. Options, futures, contracts, I'm out. I have to be out because you affect the very nature of supply and demand when you affect the supply.
It's just a curious thing. I mean,
it is a very curious thing.
Think about it, that, mm-hmm. that some geeks came up with this some years ago, and we remember when they were 10 cents. So, you know.
Sure.
Yep, I remember they were 10 cents.
Yeah, but the thing to know about now is the blockchain.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is what the takeaway from Bitcoin, the open ledger, the distributed database. And it's just a list of records, a block. And there's a timestamp and link to the previous block. So you know, you can see it from the point of origination all the way through where it is right now. And the validation of these blocks, that's what creates the Bitcoins. So my question is, once all the Bitcoins that are ever mined can be mined, then what do all the Bitcoin miners do then? Where's the functionality then? Whose job is it going to be to look at these blocks and validate them? Is that going to be one of those buyer beware things like a title search? You got to do a title search on your money? I'm not comfortable, Patrick.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable.
But if they would stick to their original thing of they're going to only have so many, that would even drive the price up more.
Yeah.
Would it? I don't know. But right now, the market cap of Bitcoin is 46. What? How many? No, this can't be right.
46 with a B?
No. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's B.
Yeah, 46 billion.
Billion.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then Ethereum, which is number 2. That's like Band-Aid and Band-Aid Plus.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the one that will survive, probably 24 billion, so
yep.
about half the market cap.
Yep.
And Ethereum is only $260. But mm-hmm. check this out. Ethereum has 92 million out there.
Right.
And Bitcoin only has 16 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do 16 million times 2,800, I guess that's where they get the market cap, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
And it changes every day. Obviously, we're at a particularly high point right now for market cap. I remember maybe a year ago, it was $4 billion. So it's grown quite a bit in terms of usage and people that are putting their bets down. But you got to do the due diligence and get down to the what is it?
Yeah, I know. So the thing that would concern me about having any kind of significant money in there, if I had significant money,
right?
I'd be buying gold and silver coins just because I've been hanging out with you for 25 years. But knowing what we know about Doug and Mel, the Gov, the one we love, I mean. There's no reason to think that if they really wanted to, the bankers, the boys, they could put an end to this.
You think? Maybe.
Well, maybe the uproar would be so much they couldn't. Yeah. But couldn't they just say, oh, you're competing with the dollar and it's illegal and who would stop them? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Who would stop them?
They could delegitimize gold from a regulatory framework.
No, I'm not talking about gold. I'm talking about Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
I mean, couldn't they say, well, you know what? There's too much drugs going on here. I mean, this is all about terrorism, and, you know, it's against our national interest. And the dollar boys could say, well, you know, it's just illegal to do this. So if you guys want to do it, it's a felony. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
from
stop them from doing
through
that?
The regulatory framework, just the same way they did FATCA. That's what I'm saying. They could delegitimize Bitcoin through the regulatory framework. But whether
they get away with it or not,
this is the point. That's why these guys are in Belize. You know, they're outside of the jurisdiction.
Sure.
It's a peer-to-peer system. There's no central bank.
Right.
There's no intermediary.
Right. But I guess you'd have to muse about what would a Supreme Court say to something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then you're really talking the nuts and bolts, right?
Right.
But can, I don't know. I guess a government. But this is a worldwide thing.
Yeah, and it's decentralized. That's the
beauty of it. To the
that
corners,
is the
right?
beauty. Yeah, yeah it's yeah, like yeah. the double-edged sword. It's,
yeah, yeah.
It cuts both ways.
Yeah. Well, it's a curious thing indeed, and how quickly it's popped up. I mean, in just less than 10 years, the whole thing is just kind of
2009.
Just kind of popped. Yeah, mm-hmm. just kind of mm-hmm. popped. Well,
the transaction fees, of course, I understand, are going to keep rising because the blockchains are just like a megabyte.
Do they have transaction fees?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. Who gets that?
Yeah. Dings. Well, people who try to convert their Bitcoin into cash, and there's also
because from these different banks and stuff.
Yeah.
Bitcoin banks.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that you know, there are entities out there trying to solve the scalability problem. And so we're getting different classes of Bitcoin, right? You got Bitcoin Classic, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin Unlimited.
Well, I think I see Ethereum, and then you have Ethereum Classic, which is the number 5.
Yeah.
I don't see another Bitcoin here.
Well, there are people out there trying to solve this scalability problem. Remember, blocks in a blockchain are limited to 1 megabyte. That's as big as that blockchain can be. So once it hits that, it's got to start over again.
Yeah.
And it creates a delay so that some transactions are not taking place at that instantaneous level that they envisioned it to be. So, I mean, there are already problems with Bitcoin, one, and there are already people competing. You mentioned, what's the second? Ethereum?
Ethereum, that's the second.
And
big
how
one.
Many are there now? It's got to be...
Ethereums?
Total.
Total Ethereums?
No, I'm sorry. Not total. Is that what they call those? Ethereums?
ETHs. Yeah. They have 90. There's 92. 90.
What I mean is how many competing systems are there?
Well, I got a list of 100 here.
100 and change.
Yeah, so you got a market cap of $46 billion for Bitcoin all the way down to number 11 or 100. I like this one the best, Pluton. It's a 16 million market cap, and there's 850,000 Plutons out there.
So maybe you and I can call them like Andy Pats.
Oh, well, we can do whatever
we'll
you
issue,
want, dude.
You know, just a million of them.
Make
and,
them up.
You know, people, you just save these because they're going up.
Yeah. It's just like sitting in Vegas and doing the numbers. It's no different.
Not much.
Is it?
Different.
No. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, the one that's got the most out there is Ripple, which I've never heard of that one.
Uh-huh.
They've got 38 circulating supply. They got 38 trillion. How is that possible? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, no, no. 38 billion. They've got 38 billion Ripple coins out there. They're number three, market cap of 11 billion. Have you ever heard of Ripple?
No, I can't say I have.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I've been just the Bitcoin chart, though. If you're into that boom bust cycle thing, that yeah. you know, well, yeah, if you like that, because there are opportunities to make money. So right now, if the attitude is everyone thinks Bitcoins are going up, so you have a lot of people that want to buy calls, right? I want to buy the right to buy 100 Bitcoins a year from now. How much will you charge me for that? And if I'm sitting there with 1,000 Bitcoins and I'm going to part them out and I'm going to sell these options on Bitcoins, okay, you can buy option. Now, the price starts to fall and the option quickly loses its value. And in fact, the environment changes from one of rising to falling. And that's when the vultures come out and say, okay, now I want to short Bitcoin. So if you would have followed the chart in 2011, right, a Bitcoin went from a nickel, what was it, a quarter, to like $30, right? And then it crashed back down to $2. And then when the Cyprus melted down, Bitcoin did it again. It went to almost $300 by 2013, crashed back to $50. And then, like, middle end of 2013, it rose again to, like, $1,250. And it was talk of all the hedge funds getting in, blah, blah, blah. And then, boom, right? Then it fall down again under $600.
Yep.
So if you like the roller coaster, boy, you know, in January 2 years ago, Bitcoin was the lowest level, right? It was on 2.25, lowest level short term. And then there was a story in the New York Times that... got interest going again. That article also, right around the same time, talked about the illicit activity that's going on and the Silk Road prosecution with that guy we've spoken about many times.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
They still haven't gotten his Bitcoins. They're so locked down in his Bitcoin wallet, right? Mm-hmm. So these same people that are storing their illicit cash in Bitcoin, and they love it when it's going up, so they just keep making the pile bigger. They're the same ones that will be running out of Bitcoin as they see their wealth deteriorate. So I'm not comfortable myself, but I applaud those with the guts to put big money into a Bitcoin. You know, no risk, no gain, as they say.
Yeah,
no
yeah,
guts,
yeah.
no glory.
No guts, no glory.
I have no guts. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I...
You got the guts?
I don't have them. No, no. Yeah,
whenever
you're not
going to
see me put, you know, $1,000 on black, not happening.
Whenever
I'll
I think
put $1,000 on.
Whenever I think
gold.
Of Bitcoin, I always think of this here with Clint. Listen.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question: do I feel lucky?
I mean, before you, do you feel lucky?
Do you feel? Because it's all about the feeling lucky thing, yeah.
How are you feeling? I just got an email from somebody who says, well, I don't even have, you know, $2,000. How can I buy a Bitcoin at $2,800? Well, you can buy it. You buy
a fraction.
A fraction.
Yeah,
that's the beautiful thing about it. It's a fraction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fraction.
Yeah, and because it's, again, a totally unregulated marketplace, you can imagine the bucket shops that will pop up and, you know, you get the email, invest in Bitcoin, and you give them your money, thinking you're buying Bitcoin, but you're not. You're buying into some pool somewhere that might own Bitcoins or might not. So I would urge you to really be careful. And if you're going to get into this, start as small as you possibly can. The same way I tell people to get into coins, start as small as you possibly can, buy, sell, you know, make transactions, and then see how it works. And once you see how it works, well, then you can make your decision whether you want to continue along with it or not.
All right. JB writes in. He's listening to this one. Hi, JB. He said there are websites out there that are trying the margin approach, and I see them being the ones that will going to be stealing from their clients.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, JB. I know it's out there. I know it's happening. You know, you've
I mean,
got
you could
the
just
vehicle.
Do a website and just come up.
Yeah, put up with a website.
Don't you have to
There's
have
no
some
regulation.
You're kidding.
It's the wild, wild, wilder than Wild West.
No kidding.
No regulation. So at least in the numismatic industry, we have the American Numismatic Association, chartered by Congress. If there's any counterfeiting, we have the Secret Service. You know, we have protection from the U.S. Mint for its product, and it jealously guards its franchise. Somebody tries to counterfeit a U.S. coin, man, they're going to the hokey. But if someone counterfeits a Bitcoin or pretends to do something with a Bitcoin, you deposit your money in the bank. They have certain regulations, loose as they might be, and certainly questionable on their face.
Sure.
There are still regulations. With Bitcoin, you have no such. There's no Bitcoin FDIC. There's no Securities Industry Protection Corporation. There's nothing in the way of consumer protection to buy a Bitcoin. And if you have a problem, you find that your entity is somewhere in Belize or outside the jurisdiction of the U.S. attorney, so you have no ability to do anything.
Well, you know, 6 years.
Not comfortable.
6 years and ago, you and I lost, 500 each Bitcoins.
I don't care.
I mean,
you know,
remember
do
that?
I care?
I know. I know. It wasn't that much. It was. What did we pay for them? Was it
40? I paid nothing. That's
know,
what I know.
You know, it was silly, you know.
Well, again.
We lost them, though. So we remember when the Mt. Gox thing happened, we were advised by Bruce and what's his face?
Bruce, yeah.
You know, the two guys up in New York.
Yeah.
Who I found out, they found out about me through you.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bruce.
Well, they were urging me to endorse Bitcoin.
Yeah, endorse Bitcoin.
And we'll give you this pile of Bitcoin. And I.
You didn't.
No, I can't. Even for money, I will not change my tune. You know what supply is. You know what demand is. You know what physical assets are. You cannot, in good conscience, change that lifetime of thinking into, go for ethereal money. No more than I can advise someone to leave their money in a federally regulated bank account. I won't even do that. How am I going to send them into the Wild West that is Bitcoin? I can't do it.
The Wild West. This is like banking was before the Federal Reserve, right?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
The wildcat banks, where they would issue banknotes. They would put their bank out in the middle of the Kentucky wilderness, and then they would issue banknotes that would get discounted into the marketplace, and it was like hot potato, and you were the last one holding the potato, in this case, the notes of that bank. And so you went out into the wilderness to find this Kentucky Wildcat Bank, and as you approach the bank, some slots open on the building and people start shooting at you. Like, you're not coming here to cash those notes.
No, dude.
You better get out of here.
That's crazy. Okay, Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, I don't even know how we got on there. Oh, just because Bitcoin was like out of control. But, you know, it is big in the East, though. I know that China, Japan, these folks.
Yeah, because of financial regulation.
Yeah, they don't like banks. They like banks even less than Americans. They don't trust banks at all.
They don't trust them.
And
but yet they trust Bitcoin. You know, it's funny how that works.
Sure. Well, don't they got to put their little yen somewhere, other than under the mattress? So they buy little bitcoins.
And they've only been allowed to own gold for a certain amount.
Yeah, because you'd almost only put so much yen under the mattress.
Yeah.
Yeah. But China has been trying to downplay and talk down Bitcoin for a while, haven't they? The PBOC.
Well, yeah, because if you think about people. Avoiding their regulation and taxation by using Bitcoin. Well, you can see why they don't like it.
Oh, you mean if you do business with Bitcoins?
That's right.
Oh, of course, and there's no paper trail at all.
No way for them to tax you.
Nada.
No way for them to get their pound of
flesh. Well, I wonder how
much
of that is going on today. Mm-hmm. See, now that would be another reason why the one we love, could say, come on, we can't do this. You guys aren't paying taxes. Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Huh? Don't poke the giant in the eye. Be careful.
No, man.
Okay. This is Patrick Timpone, Andrew Garson, The Real World of Money, where we try to make some sense out of this thing called money, and it's getting every day. It's getting more curious of what money is. I mean, now it's, who knows what it is or where it is and where it's going, but we do the best we can, and we're going to dig in some cool stuff. We have lots of good emails. If you would like to be on the show with an email or a call, 888-663-6388. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Previously, with Daniel Vitalis on one of our premier products.
And pine pollen comes in at this time in history as this important player in the herbal world, in our pharmacopoeia, in our apothecary, providing us with male hormones. And it's not because we want to become MMA meatheads who just, testosterone. It's nothing like that. It's that we need testosterone to have healthy motivation levels, to have vigor, to feel purpose. And when a person's testosterone levels get really low, they get kind of depressed, lethargic. They start to wonder what the point of life is. They start going around saying, I just need to feel more energy. Right. You know what I can take for more energy? And often it's just low testosterone levels. So pine pollen is just this crucial player. And we've brought it to market, it must have been 6 years ago now, and it has been wildly successful because it's helping so many people.
Well, it's very popular around here, as you know. The pine pollen gold is the main product. And if you want to leverage its potency even more, 4-P's, they call it, has some stinging nettle and some other good things, which kicks it up a notch. Click and order any Sir Thrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com. Also, boys and girls, remember that pine pollen, all the pine pollen products, are on sale right now, I think for another week or so, and that would be at any Sir Thrival link, and you don't need a promo code. It's just right there. It's just right there. You're just going to log in from our website, get 20% off on all pine pollen products.
We hope you're enjoying the program on OneRadioNetwork.com with Andy Goss and Patrick Timpone. For those of you interested in acquiring gold and silver coins, SDL Incorporated at 1-800-878-2646 is providing information for investors who would love to learn about how to properly acquire United States gold and silver coins. Call us today for free information, 1-800-878-2646, and learn how to incorporate gold and silver coins into your personal portfolio. USGoldCoins.com, 1-800-878-2646.
Can people trade bitcoins for coins, Andrew Goss?
Hell no.
Oh, I didn't think so. I just...
Hell no.
No, I understand. I understand.
Sorry.
Yeah. You're going to be up there today? Folks want to talk to you about something? Coins and stuff
am
like
indeed,
that?
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to talk about real money.
Real money?
Real money, no options, no futures, no contracts, physical possession, fixed supply, then, yeah, I'm your guy. Call me, 800-468-2646.
And you don't need $1 billion to get started?
Oh, no. You could buy, modern silver dollars, $25. You can buy... 1801 silver dollar for $1 million. What do you want? There's everything in between.
Everything in between.
Yeah.
800-468-2646 with Andrew Goss and his company. Previously with Stephen Huer and why the uniqueness of One World Way delivers exceptional benefits.
A non-denatured, truly pure, truly raw whey protein will only help to raise glutathione. And when you raise glutathione, you have to remember every cell of the body, your pancreas, your liver, brain, all are dependent upon 10% of the protein content and every cell being glutathione, and makes that cell detoxify itself of heavy metals, chemicals, and whatever drugs. And then that makes the cell healthy. And one of the reasons that you have chronic disease is because the cells of the different organs and bodies are producing too little glutathione. They're succumbing to the free radicals. They're succumbing to the toxins, damaging the function of that organ. And that's one of the reasons why One World Way is so profoundly therapeutically powerful, because every cell and every organ depends upon high levels of glutathione, and this is the number one food to fuel it over long periods of time is glutathione production.
One World Way offers 4 very, very good tasting flavors: chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and unsweetened, unflavored. Click and order One World Way right now on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source. One Radio Network. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, The Real World of Money. Andrew is a currency historian, and he has 2 books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, and working on a 3rd book. Well, President Trump is trying to get a major tax thing in. And do you think he's going to get that in this year? You think they're going to be able to pull it off? I guess.
For us?
I mean, for everybody.
For we the people?
For we the people, yeah.
Well, for the banks, maybe.
You don't think it's going to help people, though, with corporate taxes?
Yeah, they do. I do. But that's the bulk of their revenue. So Dodd-Frank deregulation of the banking industry, I do believe there's a bill right now in the House that they're going to get through and into the Senate. where you only need a simple majority, and the president will definitely sign it.
Oh, baby.
So repeal the regulations.
Oh, what they call a nuclear option.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Harry Reid.
I love that, yeah. The nuclear option.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, the Democrats put that in place to shut up the Republicans, and so now the Republicans are supposed to going to use it to get the anti-bank regulations repealed.
Well, if the president could, stay out of court and, maybe he'll be able to get something done. It's just amazing. It's just to me, it's so fascinating how much
mileage they got
out of this Russian thing.
Well,
tomorrow's
the Comey testimony.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Well, do you think he's going to say anything that's going to really hurt the president?
If he doesn't, then the New York Times and all those liberal news agencies and him probably, whoever leaked and all this bad information that was given, Comey said, well, then somebody's got to be accountable for that. Don't you think?
Well, I would
think so. Comey said, they were quoting him, undisclosed sources, friend of Comey's, Comey's housekeeper says. Okay, I want to hear it. I want to hear him accuse the president. I want to hear it.
Of obstruction of justice.
Absolutely.
But he cannot do that because he'd be a violation of the law himself.
Well, then what's the consequence of all these lies we've been told by the lame media? What are the consequences? They have me convinced. So what are the consequences? And the comics that are hiding behind their comedian status to say just anything they want and do anything. I mean, it's like I'm a First Amendment guy, but I don't believe they have a right to my dollar. So I'm going out of my way to avoid them now. It's like, okay, well, you support them. I can't support you. So there goes whatever, anything they're associated with, I'm not. I don't know how many other people feel like me, but I imagine this is beyond the pale. Here
the Comey testimony is like the biggest thing since Watergate in Washington, D.C. But, if I were a betting guy, Andrew, what I think he'll say...
He's going to go in there with whitewashed toast. Oh, I'm so sick to my stomach.
He's going
to
say something. I think he's going to say something. Here's what I think the president said. Something like, Mr. Comey, this whole Flynn thing is really out of control, and it's taking up my agenda, and can you just kind of, whatever, take it easy on this guy. He's a nice guy. I think this is all big a frame. Now, that's not obstruction of justice. I think that's what President Trump said, something like that.
Yeah, I read it.
Do you agree?
I hope you'll take it easy.
Yeah, that's not obstruction of justice.
I don't think it is. I hope you'll take it easy, too.
Yeah, hope you'll take it easy on the guy. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's what he's going to, and he can't lie.
As if, Patrick, presidents don't do that.
Well, you know they do.
As if. I remember Nixon, he's got a great quote about the IRS commissioner. I want him to be an SOB, but I want him to be my SOB. And if I tell him to audit someone, they better be audited. If I tell him not to audit someone, they better not be. I mean, come on. That's how presidents operate, the executive branch. The Justice Department is under the executive branch. If they wanted it any other way, I suppose they would have made him part of the judiciary, right? That's the way our forefathers intended it. So, political enemies are a fact of life in the United States. And to suggest otherwise, to suggest that Barack Obama didn't use his good office to further his agenda, come on, folks. Now we're going to be outraged? I don't think so.
Well, it'll be interesting.
How about his communications with Cuba? Our sworn enemy, right? Well, what? How did that whole thing? Unless there was some back channel communication with the Cubans, who were allies of the Russians, and the only nation that we ignored, right? Like it didn't exist. How did that all come about? Anybody talk about that? And this Comey guy in 4 months can develop an entire Russian theory about hacking our internet. But yet, the IRS targeting of conservative groups, no crime there. Couldn't find anything there. We looked, couldn't find a thing. Among others, holy cow, I remember all the scandals that boiled out of the Obama White House. Remember Filegate going back to Hillary's nonsense? So, anyway, they choose what they want to prosecute. and they choose what they don't want to prosecute. And whatever their levels of influence are, we don't know. I don't think we'll ever know.
I saw a few clips of this gal from NBC, Megyn Kelly, and with Putin. And she, of course, brought up the hacking thing a lot. And he really just toyed with her, you know, Mr. Putin. She was no match for this fellow. Poor girl. Why she chose to pick him for her show, her premiere show. But anyway, so I got a piece of tape here. Check this out. Listen to what Mr. Putin said to Megyn Kelly.
There is a theory that Kennedy's assassination was arranged by the United States intelligence services. So if this theory is correct, and that can't be ruled out, then what could be easier in this day and age than using all the technical means at the disposal of the intelligence services and using those means to organize some attacks and then pointing the finger at Russia?
For the record, U.S. intelligence has concluded Mr. Putin himself ordered the disruption of the election. Regardless, what? President Putin said the U.S. should be the last country to accuse Russia of meddling.
I will tell you something that you probably already know. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but the United States, everywhere, all over the world, actively interferes with the electoral campaigns of other countries. Put your finger anywhere on the map of the world, and everywhere you will hear complaints that American officials are interfering in internal electoral processes.
But with respect, that sounds like a justification.
It doesn't sound like a justification. It sounds like a statement of fact. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. But I repeat, we don't even have to do that. Presidents come and go, and even the parties in power change. But the main political direction does not change. That's why, in the grand scheme of things, we don't care who's the head of the United States. We know more or less what is going to happen. And so in this regard, even if we wanted to, it wouldn't make sense for us to interfere.
I like this guy. I don't know.
Give me the power to coin a nation's money, yeah. And I care not who makes its laws.
He knows his history. He knows
who's
running the show.
Yes, he does.
I don't care who's president.
It's not going to change. Doesn't matter. Presidents come and go. Parties come and go.
Yeah.
The boys that are the boys, they stay right where they are, and they keep doing things the way they always have.
And this point is well taken. I mean, come on. You don't think...
Interference in elections? Come on. The record is so crystal clear. So crystal clear. Our interference in Venezuela and Nicaragua and the Central American basin, that whole South America.
Well, it's not even interfering. It's actually putting people in. I mean, you talk about interfering.
I would call that interfering.
You think?
Yeah.
Look at the
when you go in there. Right. But you go in there, you finance a candidate, you know, you put the best U.S. political consultants at his disposal. And that, by the way, is how all of these American political operatives wound up in Russian payroll, because they're sent in to do what they do in the Ukrainian election.
You killed Saddam Hussein and put there Maliki. I mean, that's a fact. Yeah. You know, you wipe out... the guy from Libya, what's his name? Because, you know, you didn't like what he's doing. And
well, they're all bad fellas. I mean, listen, if they weren't bad fellas, how could we justify taking them out?
I don't know if they're bad fellas.
They have to be. They have to be bad fellas. Why else would we do it?
Well, they just make that up, though, that they're bad fellas.
I remember seeing pictures of Muammar Gaddafi in ladies' dress. I mean, they did everything they could to demonize that guy.
Yeah. But the people loved Gaddafi, though.
Well, they found some people that didn't love them, and the Kuwaiti incubator babies. How about that? Saddam Hussein.
And
they had the nurse come in. Oh, they were pulling the babies out of the incubators and throwing them on the floor. That's false. Oh, I'm sorry.
That was all fake news.
Yeah, that's all not true. We mobilized an entire army on that basis.
And to Putin's point, though, to think. That intelligence agencies, like any one of them, couldn't come up with a Russian IP and come up with something. Come on. I mean, it's like a kid in a basement in sweatpants could do that.
That was a good one. Well, that was McAfee, who's like, if I'm a Russian hacker, I'm working for the government, I'm not going to use a Russian IP address, you morons. How stupid can you be?
I can't believe that that they left that part on there about there's a theory that their United States intelligence agencies killed Kennedy.
Yeah.
And they left that in.
Which, oh, well, yeah. Because, you know, that's
so old.
That's crazy conspiracy talk.
Oh, that's good. Oh, they probably thought, oh, yeah, just leave that in. That'll make him sound crazy. Oh,
yeah, he's crazy. Yeah, he's crazy, man. Hmm. He must be crazy.
He must be
crazy. If he thinks the CIA killed Kennedy, well, he must be a nut. Yeah.
Total nutcase. He's just a total nutcase.
Yikes.
I know.
George Bush, Mr. George Bush of the CIA.
Mm. You studied it. You studied that.
I studied it, unfortunately, yeah. Mm. And, you know, George Bush's ties to the CIA predate the Kennedy assassination. He tries to pretend that, oh, no, didn't know anything about it till I was appointed director. Oh, really? They just pick random senators and make them directors of the CIA. I see.
888-663-6386, email patrick at oneradionetwork.com. So let's see, what's going on here? Is the government doing, what's going on here, I guess, with what the Fed is up to? Let's talk a little bit about that. The Federal Reserve Board, now we hear, there are stories out there that President Trump is going to start rolling some heads there and trying to make some changes in the Fed. But my understanding, that's just the Federal Reserve Board.
Correct.
Right. That doesn't mean anything, correct?
Not as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, it doesn't do anything. Now, though,
as Willie Sutton said, the banks, that's where the money is.
Yeah, which he can't mess with because they're private, right? It's not like you can just change the Federal Reserve Bank of New York president, can he?
Well.
Well, maybe the president's job is, I don't know.
The president, under the new regulations, gets to a point. Or approve of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's president. So I imagine since the crisis, there's been a bit of decentralization there. So, you know, the power of the New York Fed is waning a little bit.
But they're the ones that do the deed, right?
Correct.
That monetize all the debt.
Yep.
Now, Andrew, when the Federal Reserve Board, if they just say, well, we're just going to
raise interest rates.
Or, yeah, that they can do.
At the meeting in 5-7 days.
Yeah, they can do that. But can they?
That makes it more expensive for the banks to monetize debt. That's the thing.
Right. That's all that is. Mm-hmm. But can they say, well, you know, there's $1 trillion worth of, or 1.4 in student loans. Can they make that decision and then just work with the New York Fed to monetize?
Sure.
Is that how they do it?
Yeah, they could take them all in. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they do have, so they actually control quantitative easing then.
Indeed.
Okay, and of course the New York Fed doesn't mind because they just create the money.
That's...
Okay, now, okay. New York Fed doesn't care, you know, we'll crunch all you want, right? We'll just make more.
Well, but this fairy tale that they're somehow going to deleverage their balance sheet.
Well, I know, that's been going around. Now, what's that about?
Well, how on earth? You have a $4.5 trillion balance sheet.
And tell folks what that is now. Explain to them why that even matters and where they got it.
Because
that.
In the vaults of the Federal Reserve, and forgive me, I don't have my H-4-1 release in front of me. Maybe you could pull it up, but you could break out the different levels of debt. I think there's around 1.8 in Treasury debt. These are bonds, bills, and notes issued by the Treasury, taken in by the member banks in the Federal Reserve System, and then sold to the Federal Reserve in exchange for newly created money.
Yeah, I got my H-4-1 out here. What are you
looking
for?
So they got about 1.8 in those types of assets. And then the mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah, 1.8 mortgage-backed securities.
And about 1.8 in Treasury debt. Is that an accurate figure?
2.4,
forgive me. And then,
trillion,
of course.
Talks, trillion.
Yeah. And then there's the agency debt. Agency debt. Mm-hmm. It's a line that is obscure because they count it sort of like government debt, but it's not really government debt.
What is it?
Well, agency-backed securities, such as Sally Mae, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae.
Okay.
You take an entity like Sally Mae, which says, okay, we're going to issue bonds, and these bonds are sold to investors and to banks and to pension funds and everybody else, and then we're going to take that money and we're going to buy mortgage-backed securities.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, in the case of Sally Mae, we're going to buy student loans.
Okay.
student loans. So technically, the Fed could just simply ramp up that entire segment of the agency-backed securities and offer to buy previously packaged student loans and just stop trying to collect them. Don't service, don't collect, which is essentially what they've done with a lot of the mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah.
They're
just sitting there, right?
Yeah.
Who did they buy those from? From the banks.
From the banks and the syndicators. So the guys that would take $1 million worth of mortgages and bundle them together and divide them into risk tranches and create $2 million worth of securities.
Good for them.
And, of course, everything in the middle is air, and they get to keep that. And then the tranches of risk are sold out as individual securities, so hence the mortgage-backed security as opposed to a mortgage itself. So, and the same can be done with student loans, although the different risk tranches don't make sense to me because, as you know, student loan debt is like unforgivable. You can't, it's impossible to get around. You can't get out in bankruptcy. They'll seize your tax return, and there's levy and distraint used to collect.
Pretty ugly what they do.
It is ugly, yeah.
So, but hey, listen, we're doing good. The Fed has 11 billion dollars in gold stock.
Yeah,
I mean, isn't that something?
Yeah, that's great.
What does that mean?
It's like I don't know. It's 0.8% of our GDP. Our gold reserves are roughly 0.8% of our GDP.
So it says currency in circulation, 1,000 million. So that's
a trillion and a change.
Oh, trillion. Yeah, 1.5 trillion actual paper.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Paper and coin.
Paper and coin. $1.5 trillion. And that's out of about what we think is about 25.
Correct? Well, 25 is the digital number. And you know, you mentioned that what is money thing. That is a funny subject, you know.
It is. It's curious indeed.
Yeah, you could gather up 500 economists, and I bet they couldn't come to an agreement on this question. What is money? Pretty basic thing, isn't it? You would think.
Well, yeah.
But they can't agree on what money is. Meaning, if the government has issued a treasury bond, is that money? If I issue an IOU, is that money? If a bank issues a CD, is that money? What is money and what isn't money? And people carry these accounts with money market funds and so forth and claims against a pool. But is that money? You know, economists disagree. No. That is not money. It's a money market fund that you've put your money into, and then that money has been dispersed into other areas. You can't duplicate it simply by book entering it. And this is a concept that has run away in our bookkeeping economy. You pay a dollar in Social Security tax to the Treasury of the United States. They issue in the ledger of the Social Security account $1, and then they take that dollar and put it in the general treasury. Another dollar. Same dollar, but it's twice. It's double booked. And so how much of that goes on in the financial system? Unbelievable amount. So much so that you cannot find economists who will agree. What is money?
Well, there's a lot of that going around the world in all.
All asset classes.
Asset classes. I mean, there's a big report here that they went in and really looked at all the different collateral that China has, you know, and most of it doesn't even exist.
And what does exist isn't marked to market.
Yeah, it's not marked to market. So tell folks what that is. That's
well, I bought
curious.
This new car yesterday. It cost me $56,000. Everyone knows I drove it off the lot. It's worth $40, but on my books it's still $56.
Yeah,
and I drive it for 3 more years and it's worth $20. Not on my books. It's 56. Still $56.
So that's marked to market.
Yes, where you're supposed to devalue the assets as they're devalued. And
but they just forget to do that.
They don't do that. Yeah, if the real estate market crashes and they have a bunch of collateral that's real estate, they don't mark it down. They leave it at the, you know, full loan value, which is really what precipitated a lot of the collapse in the housing crisis in 2007 and 2008 for us, as folks were simply giving their keys over because they can't sell their house, and the bank's got a loan on it at a number that's way above its value, and instead of marking it down, they simply leave it alone, leave it marked as it is.
Uh-huh. You know, there's a big story, 2 or 3 days ago, where many of the Mideast countries, led by Saudi Arabia, said that they were going to And they did cut off ties with the, how do you say it? Qatar?
Qatar, that's how I say it.
Qatar?
Qatar.
Yeah, Qatar, which is this little place where Tiger Woods got a golf course or something. No, I don't know. It's just some strange, it's almost, I guess a lot of money laundering goes on there, probably more than anything. Is that true?
Kind of well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just that kind of a place. Anyway, and so, but then if you dig in and our sources are saying, you know, whoops, wait, whoa, hold on a second.
Oh, biggest LNG producer in the world?
Of course. This is not.
Did I mention that?
This is not about terrorism. This is the same thing that's going on in Syria, because that's the end point for the Russian pipeline, is Qatar, right? And that's the one reason why they're in Syria trying to take over Assad, so they won't let the Russian thing in there, and that's why the Russians want their thing in there. It's about gas.
It's about natural
gas.
It's
about natural gas. So, you know, what's the old saying, that all wars are bankers' wars?
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah.
But no, they said no. Oh, no. And even President Trump, he's bought into it, too. He goes, oh, no, this is about terrorism. And after my trip, boy, they cut him off with Qatar. Well, but Mr. President, what about that pipeline there? What do you think that's got anything to do with it? Oh, what pipeline? Come on. He knows about that.
Yeah, they have the highest per capita income in the entire world.
In Qatar?
Yeah. Their standard of living is, like, unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, so what do they do there? Do they just, who knows?
They play with money.
Play with money.
Oh, and they sell natural gas. Did we mention gas?
Of course they sell natural gas.
Yeah. Oh, boy, do they sell natural gas.
And then they're
the biggest producer in the whole world, aren't they? I mean, they're up there.
But if you look at the map and the competing pipelines that go through Syria, which is what Syria war is all about, right? Which is all this Syrian nonsense. You can go from Russia, and it goes right through Syria, and it goes all the way to Qatar.
Right.
And the European one goes through Syria, but it's from Europe to, you know, wherever else they're going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they're competing. Why don't they just get along and say, well, I'll take half and you take half?
Yeah.
They don't do it like that.
No, because, you know, a lot of the Islamic subversive groups were financed and have been financed by Qatar. So they, you know, they've been bad boys, to be fair.
Here's David in somewhere. Please ask Andy if the deep state that everyone is now referring to is the same power Woodrow Wilson was talking about when he said they know there is a power so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. Also, I remember hearing about Bitcoin first on your program years ago. Do you remember what the price was when the guest came on? I do.
30 cents.
I think it was 30 cents.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I remember when it was a dime, but seems like there were less than a dollar. Yeah, I remember when it was a dime. And, you know, the funny thing, and then we'll get to the thing, but Bruce and...
Ed
and Bruce, yeah. Two guys are decided. They have
totally... They're nicest guys in the world.
Totally fallen off the map. You know, they made $1 billion, and they're out somewhere on the beach.
I would be, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, because he was in on it early. God love him. And he was out there years ago when Bitcoin was a dime. And he knew this thing was going to be big. He felt it in his bones. And this is all he talked about. They even did a TV show, and I know they wanted you to get on, and you didn't.
Goodness. No, I couldn't. I couldn't. It was just against my, still is.
And I'll never forget the day that he said to me, he was on the phone, he said, Patrick, you should probably do a thing right now and start to take Bitcoins as donations.
Donations, yeah.
And of course, I just thought he was nuts, and I didn't even follow up on that. Well, that was not the best move in my life. I probably would have been very happy.
Yeah, please.
Come on, it would. Oh,
yeah,
listen.
I don't know. I couldn't.
I'd have Bitcoins in the bank.
Yeah, great.
At 2,800.
Yeah, right.
What?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Okay. Well, so what about Woodrow Wilson? When was he around? What year?
Signer of the Federal Reserve Act.
Oh, of course, 1913. Yeah, we know when Woodrow. So that's 100 years ago. And he talked about the deep state then.
Oh, he knew all about it, yeah.
Whew.
Yeah, and, you know, what we have affectionately referred to as the boys.
The boys.
For this entire period of this radio encounter.
The boys.
Yes, one and the same. Very same people. Trace it back to the days of Alexander Hamilton.
The boys?
You believe it? Yeah. You know, the Schuyler family and the, yeah. And the Morgans, Junius Morgan, the Rockefeller influence, and Belmont, August Belmont. Oh, goodness, yeah. Very same lineage. Very same folks that took control and didn't ever lose it. So, deep. That's pretty deep.
Deep, 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 deep. And
deep
I guess,
state.
Can we then conjecture that the different agencies, or is that too much of a stretch?
No,
do
as
we
I've
know
said,
for sure?
I've said many times, the generals do not run the army, right? Who runs the army? The sergeants run the army. And so you could change at the top all that you want, but within the framework and the apparatus of government, the bureaucrats are the ones that control the direction of government. It's what Putin was talking about. And those bureaucrats, to a man, you'll find CFR and Trilateral Commission and so forth.
All these
and
people.
To a woman
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
yeah.
All these people.
So, you know, they all are part of the right club. And in being part of that club, they find their way into the middle roles of government, which are actually the ones that run government and its agencies. So when they need an agency to do something, then, of course, they know that the head of that agency or people within that agency are loyal to the cause.
So you're talking about, for example, this term, the neocons have been out there, the crystals and these guys put together the American plan and did the whole Middle East thing. They were behind that whole thing from 20 years ago, right?
Oh, yeah,
planning Iraq and planning this whole thing.
Before Cheney's first heart attack.
Yeah, as General, Westmoreland, right?
Westmoreland,
he's been
yeah.
out there talking about this meeting.
Since Vietnam.
Yeah, since Vietnam. So, and these people have power because? I mean, not... They don't have. I know they have secret handshakes and meetings and a lot of money, but how do they?
Well, you said that last word. What was it?
Money.
Oh, money. Okay. Man, money.
So they're just loaded.
You know, the power to influence. Mm-hmm. So imagine if you had a bank that would loan you all the money that you could ever use.
Okay.
And
okay.
would look favorably upon any business venture that you proposed, and in fact, might even bring you a business venture. Hey, Patrick, here, we want you to go out and buy all these TV stations.
Uh-huh.
So this type of opportunity, the export-import bank and approval for various benefits that are given by government to individuals and their families, you know, scholarships and fellowships and contracts and grants. The list is so long that the benefits that can be bestowed upon someone who will do what you need them to do, well, that's just well established. And so then all you need to do are put people in place that are pliable enough to put their self-interest over the interest of their fellows.
Mm.
And
mm.
there's no shortage of those.
Mm. It's strange what people will do for money.
Yeah, here, take 1,000 bitcoins and tell everyone how great they are.
Mm-hmm.
Just can't do it. At what expense? At the price of your soul? If you don't really believe in what you're doing, how can you continue to do it? So those idealists that get into government and have this idea they're going to popularize or they're going to do things that are for the individuals and not so much for organizations, they're quickly corrupted. They're corrupted in every way, in their ability to run for additional office if it's an elected position, in their ability to keep their job if it's an appointed position. All of it requires loyalty and demonstrating that loyalty to the detriment of those around you. You have to be willing to do that. And I don't know. I'm not in government. I don't think I ever could be.
Well said there. Yeah, who could do? Yeah, yeah.